So, welcome after the break. And I would like to introduce you, Mr. Sebastian Fernandez. And the topic of his lecture is general notes about exploiting Windows X64. Let's start.
Good morning. I'm Sebastian. I work for Immunity. I joined the enterprise last year. I'm in the exploit development team, where my work is doing exploits. But most of my show consists on porting the framework to exploit the X64 port of the Microsoft Windows operating system. So, and now I'm researching some of the techniques to exploit client side of the 64-bit and client side. Okay. First, I'm going to introduce what X64 is, so I don't feel as talking about cloud computing. I hate that topic. Okay, and X64 has been developed by AMD some years ago, and is mostly an extension for the old x86 architecture. So it has more than seven new registers for general purpose, and 32 more bits for memory address, memory range. Okay, and most of the PCs and so last years are of this architecture. So if you go to any store, any computer store, you are gonna find that most of the PCs are held one of these processors. So as this is getting more and more used, most of our companies are porting their operating system from Mac to BCD. Microsoft also did it. Well, since Windows XP, we have a 64-bit port of the operating system. Okay. There are some points of why research X64. Okay, I should say that the main point would be that I read some bloggers saying that 64-bit applications are more safe to use, and that's not true. But security is a huge business. I have to mention some reasons that are there. Since Windows X64, the NT kernel is ported to work on this platform, and well, that's a good reason too. Okay, another reason that's to exploit remote and local services. So, 64 with Windows, and they run natively on the platform. So there are some probabilities that new bugs have been introduced while porting the system to the 64-bit operating system. Okay, client side on 64-bit age. Most of the exploits developed lastly are for client side. I mean, Internet Explorer, Windows Media on the codex, and also Firefox and Adobe also. So what's going on with client-side on 64-bit? And it's not widely used because we don't have plugins. For example, running Flash or Shockwave or Adobe, Acrobat Reader. But they most likely are gonna release a 64-bit port of the Flash plugin for their next major release. So I have seen a beta version for Linux, so this is most probably to happen. Windows 64 summary, services run natively on 64-bit, but most third-party applications still don't do it, so there's only Windows native applications. So we have the clients that I mentioned before, that are Internet Explorer and Windows Media Player. The port is included into the operating system, but they are not launched default. They're still, we open your taskbar and start and launch Internet Explorer, then it will launch the 32-bit one. So here is a graphic of what I was saying before. We have a 64-bit, we have the services, HTTP server, and local services, I mean, SMB, spool server, and that kind of local service. Okay, and Windows clients, and for example, Internet Explorer, Windows Media Player have both included because, well, Internet Explorer doesn't have plugins still. Windows Media Player, most of the third-party codecs are not supported, so that wouldn't be a very, very good marketing move to only include the 64-bit application. Okay, and 32-bit, we have a third party like Acrobat Reader and Firefox that they, I haven't seen any Acrobat Reader plan for releasing a 64-bit, and Firefox, it's already ported, but not officially. I have seen in some web page and distributing a 64-bit port. Okay. So, about internals. We have a Web 64, that is a subsystem for running 32-bit applications. I'm going to introduce it some later. Okay. And NTBDM has been removed since the processor cannot switch context to 16-bit. And, well, the FastCall calling convention is another thing that they have changed in the operating system. Okay, here's some graphic. We have the kernel that says 64-bit. Then we have the 64-bit application framework. We have a NTDLL that is a the bridge to the kernel. And then we have the other DLLs. We also have the 32-bit framework for running the applications. Yeah, we have the World 64. All the libraries for running 32-bit. Okay. Windows on Windows 64. It creates an environment for making applications run without any modification. Application doesn't even know if they are running in Web 64. It could be detected, but if you don't want to detect it, it's no problem. So basically, it patches NTDLL functions, so it makes a bridge between NTDLL 64-bit and NTDLL 32. Then it also has another registry. It creates a subkey that's called something like Windows 32-bit applications under HK computer. Also the environment variables, for example, system 32 is situated at Windows and system backslash syswo 64. And it's also responsible for switching the context to 32-bit. Okay. So, oh wait, if you can appreciate there, there are the summary of how does it patch the functions in memory. It's a hot patching. Every time it loads NTDLL, it patches the addresses on memory. So here you can see, for example, the AI user exception dispatcher that is a bridge between the syscall and the application. So WOW 64 will take care of managing the 64-bit registers. Okay. So now the old std call calling convention. Okay, each argument is pushes from right to left using C convention. Then the red value is pushed returned into AAX, and this tag is aligned to 32 bits. But that's always because the arguments, if they are 1 byte, 2 byte, or 4 byte, they always are aligned to 32 bit. So there's no problem with this. Okay. And now the fast call calling convention has already been used for other things, but now is the default calling convention for the Windows 64. So, as it includes many more registers, general purpose registers, first four arguments are passed to RCX, RDX, R8, and R9. Well, the other one, if the function needs more than four arguments, they are pushing the stack, and then a shadow space is added, so the called function can store these registers and then restore them. And then we have to align the stack to 128-bit. So that's basically the fast call calling convention. On std call, we have, as I mentioned before, yeah, you can appreciate the graphic with the six arguments pushing the stack and the read address at the start. Okay. As all arguments are pushed the 4 bytes alignment, there's no problem. And after calling the function, and the return address is stored in the stack. And here we have the fast call calling convention. We could see the last two arguments pushing the stack, and then the first four arguments passed by registers, and the shadow space, you only have to add some bytes to the RSP register. It doesn't matter if it's dirty. So, as you just be aware of align the stack before starting to push arguments. So if you have, for example, 7 arguments here, I should have aligned the stack before starting to push the arguments. I don't have a problem as I have 6 arguments. Okay, calling convention. Here are some features, if I can say that. For shell coding is pretty easier because you don't have to push the values on the stack, and you also have a more general purpose register, so you don't have to take care of the first four registers that are used for passing arguments. Okay. Well, it's some harder to make read-to-list exploits, and then I'm going to show some examples of that. It's coding. Okay, as mentioned before, NGO64 can be detected by an API call. We should be aware of not using the ACSUS code, as we might have a. First, we need to switch context to 64 bit before doing the syscall, and we also need to be aware of 64 bit registers that are going to have the return values from the syscall. Okay. Well, other things, if you do a shellcode that loads the DLL and map the functions on memory, that's going to work good because, for example, loading a DLL and using the API will redirect the directory to syswow64. Okay, so here we have another feature of, well, not this one, but this is how do we do a referencing on x86 as and the newer x64 processor and includes a new way to access memory. We can reference the instruction pointer. So, okay, now for getting an address from the shellcode, if we were needing to jump to the address and then call back, and then popping the address from the stack. Okay, that should be some funny for some, but that's okay. On x64 referencing, we could reference RIP without any problem. So, for example, we can have that address some bytes and after the shellcode, and we can reference the offset from RIP. Yes. So now I'm going to introduce some things on exploiting. That is should be the interesting topic here. Okay, when you exploit, you have the classes and use measures that were already included on the old operating system, but not the old one, but it has already been implemented on other operating system before. So ASLR is introduced in Windows Vista Service Pack 1, and the DEP is introduced on Windows XP Service Pack 2, but as Windows XP 64 is derived from Windows 2003, it's a Windows XP 64-bit Service Pack 1. Okay, the only problem that we have is that all addresses contain at least 20 bytes. I'm going to show you an example later. Well, calling convention, as I mentioned before, it's we need to make a return-oriented programming to pop in the register from the stack, and well, then calling the function to bypass the DEP. Okay. So now, how to bypass? Well, first instruction to ASLR. It's an address randomization on the modules and applications loaded. It needs to every application or module that is going to take advantage of this feature, and needs a flag to be set at compilation time. So there are some applications that do it, but some that don't. For example, at Internet Explorer we have a full ASLR, but for example, plugins like Shockwave doesn't include an ASLR. So we can know the address of the DLL and jump to it without needing to have an info leak. Right. As Microsoft distributes all its services with this flag set, we must have information leaks to get a base address and then jump to one DLL. Okay. Internet Explorer has full SLR and since version 8, but as I said, some plugins still don't do it. Okay. For the fit in SLR, we have to search for non-address randomizing modules. That will be the first technique that is being deprecated, as most of the plugins are using it. And as in X64, we don't have plugins. We need an information leakage. Okay, there's no common technique. The info leak can be obtained from a bug, for example, and have a script array that is bigger than it should be, or it doesn't clean the memory, so you can read that memory and get a DLL base. Well, and this, as the other guy told, sometimes security sucks. The Explorer 8 gives us the opportunity to get a base address because it opens, okay, not three times, but two times before asking us if we want to recover that tab again. So that's all about Stellar. We need a bug to find it. We need to find a bug to exploit it. For the fitting an application that have SLR and DEP, we need really two bugs. So that's all about SLR. About DEP, there's the protection for data sections, no stack and no executable heap. Also, virtual logs, for example, with bitmaps and other file mappings, and are not executable. Okay, we cannot use Dirac Rectulisse, but it has already been explained by a lot of other speakers before, and using the returning oriented programming. Okay, this something to have in mind when exploiting a 64-bit application, that DEP is enabled in all 64-bit applications. You don't have to set any flag and nothing else. So, okay, how to bypass that? So say we need to return-oriented programming, so first, we need a stack with all the arguments and ret addresses that we are going to use. And then we are going to have to pop each argument in the registers, the four general registers, and then return to the address of the function that we are going to call. Because there are many instructions that we can use. Well, not so much, but some. Pop plus red for each register that we need to set, or pop transcode red, or, well, for example, XORing a register and adding an immediate value, or and exchange these registers. Or, for example, I had problems to find pop R9. I couldn't find no one in any DLL, so I had to XOR it and then add some add another resistor to it. Okay. After preparing all this stack and the resistors and writing to the function, okay, we can, here is a graph of more detailed. Okay, for example, we have control of the instruction pointer. So there we can jump to exchange stack with some resistor that has the heap inside. And then we start returning to addresses that are gonna prepare everything to call the function. Well, and then calling function, for example, in virtual alloc or virtual protect that are gonna this protect the heap or some section that where we had the shellcode. So here is a stack before the it's not the EIP, it's RIP. Okay, so we have to pop and read, and maybe we should add some more read addresses. To return to read, so we can align the stack. As we must have in mind that we need to align it to 128 bit. Okay, so this is another big problem, and about the how when exploiting Internet Explorer and other things, that the application is loaded on the less significant DWAR, and all the LLs are loaded on starting at 7FF and then the DWAR, the offset. So what is it, 2 0 bytes is a null Unicode char that will cut down any string. So it will prevent any, for example, buffer overflow and using wstringcopy or stringcopy. And on client-side exploits, when you transform a JavaScript string to C strings, it will not copy the entire string. Missing something. Okay, so the buffer overflow with wstringcopy can be bypassed like this, or also adding the 7FF as stringcopy will automatically add the last 4 null bytes for the last 2 0 bytes for us. What is not is like a memcopy, you can use it also to bypass ASLR, because you can overwrite and jump to an offset of from a DLL or the application. Okay. So now I'm going to show not a demo, but an example of how can this be bypassed using some JavaScript magic. So first, I'm gonna give an introduction to use After Free. Most of you have listened about these vulnerabilities. They have been very famous, Aurora for using to hack Google and Microsoft and some other enterprises. Okay. The EPRC attribute is pretty new and have also been exploited in the wild. Okay. So the main objective in this kind of exploit is replace the the 3D object with some data that we can control, so we can then reference a bitable from that object to a memory, to a function that we might call. Okay, so here is how does an application or a function get the have the object that is in RCX, and it moves the bitable to RDX, and then it calls a function that, then for example, here is the second function of the bitable. I think that this was the vulnerability on the function pointer that we cloned the object, and then we can call it. Okay. Most of the times, objects are maintained on RCX, as before on x86, the object was also on ECX, and now RCX is our first argument, so that's okay. We have always our object on RCX. Okay, here is some graphic of how it's replacing the object. Okay. First, we have the clone, that is the first object that maintains reference to another object. Here, objects might have more than one bitable, but most of the time it's refers to the first one. So the freed object can be filled with information we control, and we could make a bitable point to the heap, and with the heap spray we could control that. For example, here is how we do it. Okay. We have to overwrite the first 4 array bytes on x64. For making it point to the heap or some memory that we can control. Okay, the way it's done on x86 is that we have a script strings that can be converted to say strings using the Unicode charset code. You can see that the way that we can use directly JavaScript strings are arrays, so we have the size before each string, and we cannot control the size. Well, we can, but we could never have a string of 0D0D0D0D size to fill in a free object. So this is a complex setting this string to an object name or to a class name or to some HTML object. Then to create the fake functions pointers, we use a heap spray using JavaScript strings as We can align it to a page and know exactly where which address will be retrieved from this table. Okay. So the problem here on x64 is that JavaScript strings that containing the null Unicode are not gonna be copied and set in the class name or name on HTML objects. So we need to find another way to load this data. The way I find it was to load the images or add behaviors to objects so I can download another data and maintain it in memory. using some tricks. Then I fill the object with the binary data. And so I only need to control the first four, the first 8 bytes. And then for the for creating the table of function pointers, I use the heap spray using JavaScript strings, as it I come nulls inside the string. It will not cut down. Okay, so that's mostly about the exploitation of x64. About loading binary data in memory is some difficult. You could use image headers, for example, not bitmaps, as bitmaps are virtually allocated on memory, so it doesn't use the heap. But for example, you can load bitmap info headers or download data, and before it is freed, trigger the exploit. So that's mostly thing. So the tools that I have used for Windows 64 were WinDVG and WinITVG. It's a Python script developed by Mario Villas that is pretty good, and it was one of the few tools that worked for x64. Then we have a port of MOSDEV. We create our shellcode on C or assembler and compile it with MOSDEV. So, and the other very known tools are AIDA 64 and the AIDA plugin. So, okay, we are implementing also a x64 support on Immunity Debugger. Well, that's most. Oh, and for searching objects in memory, I have used the MOSDEV WinIPDVG and also the DStorm disassembler. The way I search the opcodes are not the best way, but I compile the opcodes that I need, I search them in memory, and check if there are any return address near that opcode. If so, I analyze that bank of code. Well, that way I found the most of the objects I need to the return oriented programming. So okay, the future on Windows 64 application is look for more interesting bugs. For example, casting pointers to remove compiler warnings, for example, from a pointer to the word that you can overflow the word pointer, the pointer, and okay. We are also waiting for some plugins for Internet Explorer, so clients are used widely. Not like now that they are there, but no one uses. We are suspecting that next Windows is, for example, Windows 8 has more applications for 64-bit. Okay, that's all. And now, if you have any question, I'm gonna answer them. Okay. So thanks.
So thank you, Mr. Fernandez, for your lecture. And now we will have a 15-minute break. And Please come back later.